Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut or shortened due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today, I'm very pleased to say, is Marielle Wise, founder and creative director of Wise London, the women's wear brand. Having followed as a child her mother's passion for making her own clothes, Marielle's career began in the world of fashion, organising models and shoots for Elle and Sky magazine, before a move to television, making wildlife documentaries. Having paused her career to concentrate on raising her young family, it was 8 years later that Marielle, age 49, and hungry to create something new, was inspired by a friend to start her own business. Never having found the perfect cashmere jumper, Marielle set out to create her own range. Wise London was launched in 2015, starting with five designs and growing slowly and leanly, as she said, before reshaping, during lockdown, how they connect with and understand their customers. Much more on that shortly. They've since opened two central London stores with a growing business in the US and an ever-expanding clothing and accessories range. It's lovely to have you here. You are the founder of your own business.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you, Elliot. I am.
You are?
It would seem, yes.
Well, it's funny you say that it would seem. Here we are, we're almost 10, pretty much 10 years later. What does it feel like looking back to go, I did that?
It feels like an accident that kind of transformed into a business. I mean, I never was one of these people that thought I'd start a business. But now I've done it, I understand why it's happened.
And why has it happened?
Because I needed to be in control of something. That sounds awful, doesn't it? But I needed to run something. I've always had a desire to lead something. And I think through my career, without having run a business, working for other people, I've always sort of slightly asked myself the question, why aren't they listening to what I'm saying? It's such a great idea. And I think it helps having that element of you, because that has allowed me to actually follow some of my sort of love and passions and convictions and lead them. Which is something I naturally have, I think.
And where does that come from, do you think? I mean, we talk about genetics and we might get on to worry and things like that in a bit. But let's talk about the desire to lead. Because I know exactly what you mean. Like, I feel the same.
Yeah.
I'm not running my own business. I'm an owner in a business. But it's not quite the same. You're like, of course I've got the right answer.
I think,
where's that from?
I think, you know, my dear brother would say that, you know, I was the one who was the boss between the relationship between siblings. And I've always just wanted to make decisions. And I think it's genetic, to be honest. Mm. I think it's something you either have or you don't. My father did have a business, and maybe I watched a little bit of that. But I think it's just one of those things that you have in you. And I just didn't realize it until I started running a business. And then it started to all fall a little bit into place.
I want to come obviously to Wise London, but your dad ran a record shop on
the
King's Road.
Yeah, he ran a record shop on the King's Road. And it's really funny because, oh God, it's the loveliest story. When I opened my shop on the King's Road, which is down the road, and he opened it in the 1960s, my brother came with a picture of my father's shop, which I then hung in my shop. And then my kids gave me a picture of them outside the shop holding the picture. So generations are going through the King's Road, which is lovely, actually.
And your dad, where do you think your dad had that thing from as well, that desire to do his own thing?
Well, I think it all stems from something which is whatever you love to do. His was a record shop. He loved music. He loved jazz music and classical music. And he started as a record shop and it transformed into a bigger business. But I think we both ended up doing something we love. I think that's the only way to do a business, actually, is it has to be something you love.
Now, as you were saying, you didn't always make clothes, but you did want to lead. You were in the fashion world. Was that fun? I mean, a bit of fashion photography, I think. You were helping.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I left it because I found it, I think, two-dimensional. I sort of found that there wasn't enough to it. I loved it, but it didn't go any further. I wanted more context, more meat to it. I thought, well, there's only so much I really worry about a picture, a fashion picture. And as a child, I used to make all my own clothes. And I think that what I'm doing now taps into that desire to create. But I've also got the aspect of running a business. Mm. So I think it operates different areas of my brain that I really like to operate. So I like the challenge of running a business, but I love the beauty of creating clothes and the emotional connection that people have with clothing.
And let's talk about the beauty of making clothes. So that did begin as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I read somewhere that the gingham shirt
mm-hmm.
was the first thing that you kind of made properly mm-hmm. that you would consider an item. What does it feel like when you make stuff? You personally.
Amazing, actually. It is an amazing thing because you're starting from nothing. And sometimes I remind myself it's actually like there is nothing. And so you sit down and you know, as a team, you say, right, I like this and da-da-da-da. And next thing you know, a sample comes in and it could be awful, but it can also be amazing. And you think, we created that. And it is a very rewarding thing to do because you're just starting from scratch and just making things. And they can really, really make people happy, you know, when they wear them, if you've got your job done right, basically.
I mean, the mood you're in when you're actually creating and the team is creating must be really a key determining factor of where you go. Because, again, the business for you is that you talk about timeless style rather than the faddy fashion thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come on to the
mm-hmm.
the forgotten woman
mm-hmm.
that you talked about
mm-hmm.
earlier on and now the joie de vivre mm-hmm. point around, I just want to tap into women who are different ages mm-hmm. now, not just middle-aged.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of mood are you in when you create? Does it change and does it affect where it comes out?
It does change. It's very much a mood that reflects, I think, as well, where we are in the world a little bit. I mean, if if the world is in a great, happy place, you want to do flamboyance. And I think when it's in a sort of more, tricky place, you want some core things that you can wear all the time that makes sense for the current lifestyle that you lead. It does change, though. I do change depending on, how I feel about things. I would say it's quite challenging, actually, to create. You have to really, really feel things. And, it is very much a teamwork. It's like, what do you think about this? And how do we do this? But I think that some people see in words, some people see in pictures. I see, if somebody says to me, can you see this in this colour and this colour and this colour? I can. So I think I've got an ability to visualise, and I think that that really helps with my day-to-day.
I remember interviewing Thea Green, and obviously she's in Nails Inc. and all that, and we were talking about who makes the decision in the room. You know, if it's going to be a gauche green or it's going to be a rougey red, who does in your... Is it Marielle the leader, or are you a bit more democratic than that?
No, I try and be democratic, because I say, what do you think?
And do you mean it, though? Marielle?
I would say
mostly.
65% of the time. Yeah, sometimes I'm just like, no, that just doesn't work.
But the no's are over there, I get that. But where it's like, are you surprised sometimes by the team and you go, that's better, that's bigger, that's more interesting than I was thinking?
Definitely. And sometimes I look at them and I go, okay, you're cool, let's give it a go. And then when it happens and it works, I remember that it was their call. And that is democratic. It is a teamwork. I do feel like because I am the customer and because I am wearing it, and that's why I created it, was just to make clothes that I wanted to wear, that I really should feel comfortable with it as well.
Stay with me for much more from my business shaper. It's Mario Wise, founder of Wise London. It is London, isn't it?
Yes,
Wise London. Good. That was lucky.
Yeah.
But it's global. Wise London, but global.
Okay.
She's coming back in a couple of minutes. But right now, we're going to hear a taster from the Positive Disruptors series, a new podcast which can be found on all the major platforms. Kieran John, a lawyer at Michigan De Rare, talks to leaders who've taken innovative approaches to make a positive impact. In this clip, we hear from Sarah King, co-founder of Obu, the fintech supporting angel investors and purpose-led women-founded businesses.
Positive Disruptors from Michigan De Rare.
Where angel investing has gone wrong is that it's maybe been very transactional, so it's become about financial return. And I will do my due diligence. And do I think that I will get a return from this business? Great, I'll invest. And then at some point in the future, maybe there will be an exit event and I will get some cash from that. And I think that's really sad. I think business can be about so much more than that. And that's what angel investing should be about. It should be about, we have a shared belief that this business can solve this problem. And what can I as an angel investor do beyond just placing some capital that enables that to happen? And maybe that's as simple as taking that entrepreneur for a coffee every quarter so that they can just share how it's going and you can be a sounding board for them. And I think we need to move this idea of angel investing being about a transaction into something that's about relationships and about coming together and acknowledging that entrepreneurs and angel investors have a really critical role in shaping the world that we live in. And that to me is just joyful and exciting and has so much potential within it.
Positive Disruptors from Mishkon Durea.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Durea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. My guest today is Mariel Wise, founder and creative director of Wise London, the women's wear brand. So we talked a little bit around the process, but I want to go back in time a little bit. So 2015 comes. You've been a mum for around 8 years or so.
Eight, ten years.
And when you're in it and you're a full-time anything, whether it's work or whether it's being a parent, the rest of life sort of disappears. It becomes the primary focus. It sounded like you wanted something else beyond being a mum. Is that right?
Oh, gosh, yes, I really did. And I tried very hard to go back into television, which was my previous career. I used to make television programs. And I couldn't find something. I'd made natural history programs, and I couldn't find something. I was being asked to do, like, daytime programs and things like that, and I just thought, I don't really want to do that. That's not exactly where my heart is. And I couldn't find something that would fit around having two children. And I was very much a dedicated mum, I think, in that I wanted to do one thing. I think in life is that if you're going to do a job, do it well. So I wanted to be a good mum, and I had to find something that fitted into my life. And what I didn't realize was that by starting a business, you could, one of the amazing things of it is that you can make it revolve around your life, kind of less as it grows in a way. But it allowed me to do that. And I, as the kids grew older, the business got bigger. And it kind of happened. I don't know if it happened by accident or because I allowed it to happen or I made it happen or whatever. It worked with my life.
Was there a sense also when you were a mum that your sense of who you were and your full-time mum, and this could happen to full-time dads as well, this is not a gendered point, so to speak, but your sense of who you were had changed and maybe that self-worth wasn't there?
I can't emphasize how tricky that period of my life was. Much as I absolutely loved my children and, you know, was the best lasagna maker or whatever it was, I definitely lost my identity. And looking back, I found that hard. And I would say openly to my kids now, and I would encourage them to kind of keep something going underneath. Because when I found it back in a new way, it was great. You know, even though it's challenging, it was great to have something to strive towards.
You know, though, when you're in that place where you're doing a great job and the lasagna is fabulous, mm-hmm. and everything works and the kids are ready and you're spending brilliant time with them, you're watching these beautiful little seas grow into mm-hmm. wonderful flowers mm-hmm. and all that. How did you grab yourself out of that with that lack of that lower sense of self-worth or confidence? And how did you transport yourself into you knew you had to do something, but you actually did it, because a lot of people get stuck and they, you know, they want to move on, but they can't. How did you do that?
I think mainly it was just not luck, but creating luck. You know, I just showing these things to people and they were really picking them up and looking at it. And I thought, oh, somebody might like this. And then I did a fair and then it was busy and I was selling things. I was like, this can actually make money. And I kind of went with the flow a bit. I sort of never really did it knowing what would happen or thinking what would happen. I've never written a business plan. I've never read a business plan, probably to my detriment, actually. But I think what I did was I realized there was an opportunity and I seized it. And I think that part of the way to navigate your way through part of life is to see when there's an opportunity, because you never know what can happen.
The organic nature of the growth. Back then in 2015, it's five pieces at the fair. Here we are in 2024, 10 years on or so, and it's a bit more than that. Mm-hmm. What do you put it down to, this growth?
I think it's probably seizing opportunity again. And I would just cite the moment of lockdown at this point. It was, what, March 2020?
Yeah.
And we were a wholesale business as well as a direct-to-consumer business. And I remember looking at the team and saying, we have to cancel all the wholesale orders because I don't know that any shop is going to come back in business. And so I went home and I thought, well, what have I got to do? And I thought, well, the only thing I've got is my phone and Instagram. And I turned the phone on myself and I started talking to the consumer. And the moment I did that, it changed our business. And we dropped a whole wholesale business. The conversation with the customer really took off. And we just shot.
So the camera goes on. You got it, you're facing it, you're looking at it, and you go, what am I going to say? What did you say?
I said, how are you all doing? It's a bit rubbish out there, isn't it? Should we talk about clothes? Because we might as well talk about something nice. And we did. And we never stopped. And
and that feeling at that when the thing went on?
We just...
For you, though, what was the feeling when you literally started talking?
Well, it was, again, an opportunity. And it just made sense. And it was a great voice because it was a conversation between me and the customer. And she said, no, I don't like that colour. I was like, good point. I don't really like it either.
So they were coming back very quickly. Like
in
a
bucket
lot. Loads. I mean, how did you, now there's 140,000 people that are following. You've got ambassadors who are constantly saying, hey, look at me. I'm a different shape to that woman there. Look at me. I'm a different shape, different age and all that. But the influx, you must have a team that has to deal with all of those.
I still do quite a lot myself because I still like to listen to what the customer's saying. And I have got a few people to help now on Instagram and things like that. But I think that conversation is probably at the heart of our very business because without the customer, we're nothing. And a lot of brands think that, I hope. But it's a direct insight. You know, it's right there.
But that dialogue must be authentic, Mario. Because
if it isn't,
there's a load of brands that try and listen, quote unquote, or that try and present themselves in a certain way. What do you think is in the DNA of the brand, removing yourself from it? What is it that people are connecting with?
I think they connect with the fact that I'm a woman like them, the same as them, going through all the things that people go through, the ups, the downs, the this, the that, you know, and I want to feel good as much as they do. And so it's completely genuine conversation between us. There is nothing inauthentic about it.
And it's funny, interesting you say it was an opportunity. A lot of people in the retail world during or just at the beginning of COVID would have said the absolute opposite. This is the death of my business. Was it just obvious to you that this was a chance to go direct?
No. I had no idea I was going to do it. But again, I think one of the things that I have is I'm not very good at learning systems or routines. So when you don't have that in you, there's nothing to stop you. So you just go with the flow. And I just went with the flow. And it was fun. It was really good fun.
Final chat coming up with my guest there. It's Mario Wise. And we've got some music from Jordan Rakai. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
You're listening to Jazz Shapers. And it's me, Elliot Moss, talking to Mario Wise just for a few more minutes. So this growth has been great. And this, you know, in best practice books, they say you've got to understand the consumer. Useful because you are that consumer. Where does it go from here? What's stopping you serving all the brilliant consumers who are the forgotten women, and which I just want you to talk about for a moment, as well as the women who have a joie de vivre? And I guess at that moment, you haven't quite pivoted away from a woman like you, but what you're saying is there's also a whole bunch of other women who are not the same age as you, who are not the same as you, going, I really like the style of that. How are you going to keep on talking to both and keep on growing with both?
I guess it's having a good team on board that keeps you thinking what's relevant, what's new, what's good. I don't want to alienate my customer, but I do want to bring in new customers as well. So it's how you keep fresh and moving the brand forward. You don't want a stale brand. You want a brand that surprises people, but still within the confines of who you are.
Yeah, because as anchors are important.
Really important.
The Deborah Bett Initiative. And then I think you've had a couple of others with, is it Amelia Fox?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you decide who you collaborate with? What do they bring to the business? Is it just freshness, simply?
It's a little bit of freshness, a little bit of like-mindedness, for lack of a better word. It's just people that, you know, women that like to look good, feel good. They bring a different dynamic. They've got maybe a different, slightly different DNA to me in particular. It's just, but it's harmonious somewhere. So it's just a little bit different angles onto the same big circle.
Is it the gut, though, that decides whether
Everything
it's going to work or not? Because the herringbone
Everything.
Jacket I was looking at, or the blue denim jumpsuit, you may think I've gone a bit mad, but
you're good.
I'm good because I'm on my wife's, Lindsay's, super into fashion, so I've become a kind of a crummy student, but I enjoy looking and going, oh right, but that reminds me of other brands as well. But there's a moment when you go, no, that's out outside the confines
Definitely.
Of the castle.
Yeah, no, I do. Occasionally I'm like, maybe rein that one in a little bit.
And you just know. You're not looking again at a style guide.
I just know. And by the way, I'm not always right, but no. I have to somewhere along the line say, I think that's not quite working, or it is, or whatever. So within the confines, but we push it. We do like to push it as well. And you know, it doesn't always work, you know?
Do you want to be huge? Do you want to be a mega brand?
That's a very good question. I would like the brand to be much bigger than it is, because I think it serves, you know, without, it doesn't sound big-headed, but I see why people like it. So I would like it to be bigger than it is. Huge, if it can be huge, but still be the heart and soul of who it is, then fantastic. But I still would like to see the heart and soul remain.
So here's a theory, a premise. 4,500 people in your business now, imagine, not 45. You're in 15 countries. Do you want to be at the top of that, or do you want to be the person that said, I created that?
Probably by the time that happens, I will be the person that has created that, given where I am. I started a bit late in life. I wish I kind of started earlier, but I can't go back, so there we go.
Do you wish you had started earlier, though, truthfully?
I think that I would have seen more of it develop if I had. But maybe I wouldn't have had that life experience. So, you know, you can't regret anything, because there's no point. But there's arguments both ways.
It's been great to chat to you, Marielle. Thank you. And thanks for your openness as well.
Thank you.
Good luck with the 4,500 people I've just made up
crossed.
For you. Yeah, fingers crossed. And world domination for Wise London and then the world. Just before I let you disappear, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
So I've chosen a song, All of Me, by Billie Holiday. It's dedicated to my father, my no longer here father, who was a big jazz fan and loved Billie Holiday. So there we go.
Billie Holiday with All of Me, the song choice of my business shaper today, Marielle Wise. She talked about wanting more context, the fact that doing a job wasn't enough, and she wanted the creative side and she wanted the business side. Do whatever you love to do. If you're going to run your own business, you have to love it. Otherwise, it is just not going to work for you or indeed anybody else. I went with the flow, she said, that moment of transition from being a full-time mum into building a full-time business. And finally, I am a woman like them. In other words, that relatability, that fact that she is in the shoes of her customer, has really helped Wise London become what it is. Great stuff. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/jazzshapers.